Hi, everybody. I'm Adina. Oh, welcome. So are there any newcomers here? Anybody within their first six Al-Anon meetings ever? Okay. Well, people have been here. So I want to talk about the Serenity Prayer tonight because that has just turned into... It's just saved my bacon. It's something that has become incredibly important to me. And I'm already starting to cry. I mean, I was crying when you were talking. And so now, you know, there's just going to be some serious waterworks. So I had heard the Serenity Prayer before Well, let's say I had seen it probably on a pillow embroidered someplace in somebody's house. But I had never heard the Serenity Prayer before coming into Al-Anon. And generally, we open and we close our meeting with a Serenity Prayer, and so I would say it, but it took me a long time to feel it. I didn't feel it very much. It was just something we did. It was, you know, mostly my community with you, but it's become something much richer for me, and the beginning is God. And for me, that's how I know that it's prayer. And that is really my go-to prayer. And, you know, when I say the Serenity Prayer to myself, which at this point is pretty much the last thing I do before I fall asleep and the first thing when I wake up, it's really, for me, calling on God. And I could not have gotten to having a relationship with God until I admitted that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable, because there was no room for God when I came into Al-Anon, because there was only one person in charge, and that was me. There was just no room for anybody else. And so it wasn't until I understood the level of unmanageability in my life and that sort of even began to even scratch the surface of the powerlessness that I had over you. That I could begin really to do the work in Al-Anon that I needed to do. I mean, I knew things were bad, because none of us arrives in Al-Anon because our life is a party. I mean, I was at a seat at the Al-Anon table because, you know, things were really swirling around the toilet bowl of my life at that point. So I didn't really think of the word unmanageable when I came in. I just knew that things were really, really bad. But I didn't connect the dots that there was anything about me that was making my life unmanageable. It was really what you people were doing that had made my life so unmanageable. And that I certainly didn't think that I was powerlessness. I think I probably thought, well, maybe I just need to get more powerful. The problem was I wasn't powerful enough. So, if I figured out some different ways to say things, maybe I could gain some more power, and that would really be the solution. But at the same time, I crawled in. So there was a part of me that was desperate enough that I was willing to listen to you, and I was willing to, pretty close to the beginning, not the first day, but pretty close to the beginning, I was willing to do anything to feel better because I just felt so bad. And so I just listened, I listened, I listened, and I cried a lot. It was just pretty clear pretty early on that my life was completely unmanageable, and that I didn't need to get more powerful. I needed to let go of the crazy idea that I had that I could control you and that I was going to be powerful. enough to manage my life, manage you all. And so it was really the humility of, one, the circumstances where I, you know, burning down, there was a lot of wreckage. And so I was aware of that and aware of that I had made choices that had led to that. But I didn't have what today I recognize as humility of how unmanageable my life was, and that I was really powerless. I don't, when people say, you know, oh, you're going to share your story, that's not really my thing. And what I understand is that it's a very important part of, for example, in AA, that for people to share their stories as a that it helps keep people sober, a reminder of what they did. But my story wasn't about what I did. My story, my whole life, was about what you did. And I actually needed to let go of that. And so I think about it more as, you know, how it started and how it's going. And it didn't start out very well. My childhood was a terrible dress rehearsal for my life. Absolutely. And, letting go of, what I thought up until when I came into Al-Anon about what the problem was part of, has been a big part of my recovery, letting go of the story, because it wasn't helping me. It was just hurting me. It was really the story of what you did to me and what my family did to me. And it was just an endless loop. So I had to really understand sort of the genius of how the steps were ordered, and that I couldn't, there was no way that I was going to have a relationship with God until I started dealing with the one I had with myself and my powerlessness. So I spent, for the first few years, it took me a year on each step, and then it got even longer once I hit four. But let me just say, it was a year on step one, and a year on two, and a year on three. But two, coming to believe that there was a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity, I also, by that point, when I hit two, understood what insanity was, because I really had an idea about what unmanageability was and how insane I had become in my life before coming to Al-Anon. And I did at that point believe that there was something greater than me. I didn't grow up, even though I grew up in a religious tradition where we went to, you know, maybe once or twice a month, my family went and we prayed and we were involved in a religious community, but I didn't hear anybody talking about a personal relationship with God. Al-Anon was the first time I heard that. I heard prayers, I heard people talking about God, but it was, God was always like over there, up, over, behind, somewhere. But it wasn't that people talked about their God, their higher power, their relationship. So that I didn't really know about. And but by the time I hit step two, I had begun to admit my powerlessness and come to understand that I wasn't in charge, even though there were still a lot of times I wanted to be, but that there was something bigger than me. And the way I came to that was all my efforts to control you had really failed. And that I didn't have the power that I thought I had. And I guess I needed the comfort of something bigger than me, because I could admit that I wasn't the biggest thing going. You know, it wasn't me. So maybe there was something else that was going to be in charge. And that actually started to give me some comfort. That at the beginning when I came into Al-Anon, the idea that it wasn't me was not good. I was not a fan of that. But eventually, it actually seemed like a really good idea and a better idea than me being in charge, because I had had so much failure in that role that I think I was just ready to, you know, to at least entertain the idea about giving it up. I was just wildly unsuccessful, wildly. I think that it's been a long, long evolution, my relationship with God. And it wasn't something that was in the forefront of my mind. I would forget a lot. I would remember, and then I would forget. I would remember, oh, there's a higher power, and then I would forget. And stretches would go by. And then those stretches would get shorter and shorter. But it really took years to sort of have that be a more consistent, and today I can say really daily relationship and a very active relationship, but it took a long, long time. And so I just want to encourage people, if you're at the point where you're not even sure about that, you know, relationship, or having a hard time keeping some sort of like hold on a relationship with a higher power, just keep coming back. Because if that's what you want, you will have that. It took a long time, but I'm super, super grateful today that I have that. And I think there were a lot of things for me that got in the way. I didn't have what I see other people who struggle with the concept of God, whether it was because they came from a religious tradition and there was a sense of a judgy or a mean God or something so far removed that it was never going to be able to be close to them. I didn't have that. And I see and hear people struggling a lot with the idea of God. And Al-Anon doesn't tell us what our God is supposed to look like or should look like. And it's up to each of us to figure that out for themselves. And the only thing I would say about that, if you're struggling, is don't let it get in the way. Don't let anything get in the way of your recovery, your serenity. And it's just, you know, sort of, we get to making a decision, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. And we get to make that decision over and over again. I don't think it's a one and done. It certainly wasn't for me. And so I just encourage you to, not let it stop you from, however you get to having a partner in life. That, I mean, I know that, you know, when I take my last breath, it's going to be me and it's going to be God. There aren't any guarantees of anything else, but that one is the one thing I'm sure of. So what I do want to say also about, you know, before I could really get to God, is I struggled so much with where I came from, which was growing up in a family with alcoholism. And there were just a lot of difficult things, like most of us, particularly who grew up with alcoholism, to sort of to start to unpack, to start to understand what happened to us. And I like, there's something what we say, keep talking, just don't keep saying the same thing. Just keep talking. And if you hear yourself saying the same thing, you're kind of stuck, right? So what is it that you need to get unstuck? Do you have a sponsor? Are you going to meetings? Are you reading literature? Keep talking. keep talking. I also heard at a meeting, God is never in the details, which I love. It reminds me that the minutiae, the who said what, who did what, that's not where God is, and that's not where my solution is going to be. I think that making a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God involved a tremendous amount of surrender, which wasn't easy. It's a huge leap of faith involving lots of trust, which is something that I have not a lot of. I didn't pretty much had any when I came into Al-Anon, and maybe I have a little bit now, but not tons still. But I'm willing to do anything to feel better. And that is my recovery speaking. I've heard when we are broken, we can take ourselves back to God to be repaired. We can be disappointed because we expect so much less than God has planned for us. And it just, you know, when I hear how we talk about God, it gives me hope. And I'm reminded that there is a greater plan. And so when things don't look exactly like I want them to look or how I think they're supposed to look, I try and remember that that's my plan. And I'm no longer believe that I'm the one in charge. And if I forget that, I can see that I've forgotten it because I'm thinking, well, this is not on schedule. You know, I'm not getting what I think I should have by now, and it's not my plan. And actually, I find great comfort in that. If you asked me before my recovery about that, there would be no comfort at all. Today, it's comforting to me to think that God is there for me and that there is a plan even when I'm not thrilled with it. I think the next part of the Serenity Prayer, grant me, it's a nice way of saying give me. it sounds less demandy, but we are asking, and we're asking for serenity. And, you know, I don't ask for a lot. When I first came into recovery and I was in so much pain, I would pray for courage and strength and hope. Those three things, just like prayed my ass off all day for courage and strength and hope. And I was never a person who prayed for like a good parking place. I have a friend, she prays for everything. Parking places, let this be on the menu and not that. She and her higher power talk about the minutia, and that works for her. For me, I think I do ask for serenity, and I have a sense of what that means today that's very different than what it used to be. I actually used to think that that meant happiness, and it took me a long, long time to understand that for me, happiness is a feeling, and I didn't understand a lot about feelings. The first thing for me is that feelings are meant to come and go. They're not meant to stay here, whichever one they are. And, you know, it's the same with grief. Grief doesn't sit there and stay there front and center 24/7. We couldn't live if it did. But why would happiness be any different? It's a feeling. And so that was something I had to let go of. The idea that when we think about praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out, I used to think, well, God wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And that's shifted because I actually don't think, I think God is pleased when I'm happy and it's like, oh, phew, I can go do something else because, you know, this girl's okay for at least 5 minutes. But I don't think that's what God's will is for me, is to be happy. I think that's a byproduct of serenity that, if I don't have serenity, I have no hope of being happy. But it's the serenity is what I do pray for. And that I read my prayers have changed because my prayers have changed me. And that is really true. Even though I never prayed for a parking spot, I did pray for happiness, and I don't anymore. You know, I talk with my sponsor about, I think that serenity is a state of being. It's not a feeling for me, it's a state of being. And the good news about that is that I can cultivate it. I can put myself in a position where I am more rather than less likely to have serenity by the choices that I make. So I can cultivate serenity, but I can't make myself feel happy, because I don't have that kind of power. I can't make myself feel something that I don't feel. So it's a relief to me that I can cultivate serenity as opposed to insisting on happiness or lying about happiness or being upset that I'm not happy. For me, serenity comes through prayer and meditation a lot. And it was difficult for me to find prayer and meditation. I needed to work steps. It wasn't like I worked 2 and 3 and then it was like, okay, I've got this great relationship with God. I'm ready to, you know, pray and meditate and we're good to go. I really had to make a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. I had to work step 4. And I had to get honest about who I was, because I lied to myself about a lot of stuff. And I had no idea until I came into Al-Anon how much I lied to myself. So I had to start telling the truth. I had to learn who I was. I had to tell myself the truth. And that was both as to shortcomings and assets. When I worked the 4th step the first time, my sponsor at the time said, basically all I'm hearing are about crimes, you know, misdemeanors, felonies. That's your list. That's what you're telling me about. Everything that you've ever done to hurt another human being, your entire life. And she said, that's not what a 4th step inventory is. So I had to get more honest with myself and get to know myself. And I was afraid. She would say, I would just say, I want to be a good person. I want to be a good person. And I had no idea what she meant. She said over and over again, Al-Anon is not about being a good person. And I thought she was insane. What do you mean? And she would just look at me and all she would say is, the goal is not to become a good person. That's not what this is. And it took me a long time to understand that the reason why was because I felt so badly about myself. That was why I wanted to become a good person. And also that when I read something that said, you know, we're not bad people who are trying to become good people. We're sick people who are trying to get well. I thought, oh, that's what she was talking about. I'm not bad, I'm sick. And the goal isn't to be good. It is to heal and to get better. But that was the 4th step that allowed me to see with more honesty who I am. She would say something about, you need to become more of yourself. And the first time she said that, I said, are you kidding? Who wants more of this? Not me. That's what I said to her. And today I understand, especially in this context, you know, every time I think I need to be somebody else, I really just need to be more of myself. And thinking that I need to be somebody else shows up God, I wish I could. If only I could. Maybe someday I could. It shows up that way. You know, if only I didn't. If only I could stop. That's me thinking I need to be somebody else. Today, that's not who I am. And so I need to become more of who I am, not less. And that'll get me where I'm going. I know that today. I did step four and step five together, and admitted to God, to myself, to another human being, the exact nature of my wrongs. And that was getting past the fear and the shame to say who I am out loud. And I just, sponsorship has been such a profound part of my recovery. And the first sponsor where I really dug in, I chose her because I was in this big meeting in Berkeley they have a lot of rules. I don't know if they still do. Then they had a lot of rules. So you stood up when you shared. It was also a tag meeting. It was also at my first timer meeting. So there was a lot going on there. It was a busy, busy meeting. And this woman stood up and she said, if I don't ask for what I want, I'll try and steal it from you later. And the first thing I thought was, who the hell says that out loud? I mean, really, let alone, oh my God, what is that? She had no shame about it. In that moment, no shame at all. She was honest with herself. She was honest with us. But my God, who says that out loud? I just couldn't even believe it. And I went home and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And what I thought was, I want what she has. It was so powerful. So she became my sponsor, and she was really tough. She was as honest and as tough with me, like super tough. But that's who I worked my fourth step with. And we spent a little over 2 years on blueprint for progress. And it was tough, but it was what I needed. But still, in that relationship, she was extremely forthcoming with what she thought about things. And so if I didn't want to hear what I presumed she was going to tell me, I would just not tell her about something. So I would basically go around her. And eventually I realized that I was lying to her and lying to myself. And what's the point of having a sponsor that you lie to, you know, in trying to avoid something? Something wasn't exactly right for me. And I did make a commitment going forward that I would not do that anymore in a relationship with my sponsor, that I made a decision to that I was going to tell my sponsor in the future basically everything that I was afraid of and ashamed of. And that was a commitment that I made to myself. And I do want to say that part of step three made a decision. And that's about turning our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood God. But I have really come to think about that in a little bit of an additional way. There are lots of things that I have been thinking about, particularly recently, where it has the same depth of made the decision. And in hindsight, I made the decision that I was going to be honest with a sponsor in the future because I was, she didn't give a shit, really. I was hurting myself. I wasn't hurting her. And so I made a decision. I wasn't aware at the time that it was like a step three, making a decision. But today, I see along the way, both in hindsight and going back, and also today, that there are lots of ways for me to make as profound a decision the step three kind of decision, not the little, you know, what am I having for dinner kind of decision, that feel big and important. So I love that part of step three too. Let's see. I do like, you know, when talking to God and asking for help, that I heard, instead of telling God about how big my problems are, why don't I tell my problems about how big my God is? And hearing that really helped me think about, you know, proportion and size. And I do want my God to be bigger than my problems. And the truth is that relationship is bigger. It doesn't always feel that way. Sometimes problems or feeling badly about something or any feeling can just be feel huge, but it's never as big as God feels to me. And so that comforts me a lot. And one other thing I want to say about God is that I was actually visiting an Al-Anon person who had temporarily moved to Savannah, Georgia. And we took this tour, and we were in this house of worship that had a very significant historical, profound sort of historical meaning. It was a house of worship that was a sanctuary for saving people who were in desperate circumstances and would otherwise have been killed, basically. And so it was a very powerful place. There were etchings in the wood, which were sort of like directions and arrows and for people to find safety and to be sheltered. And in the back on this tour, there was this sort of showcase of all the leaders of this church. And there were their photos, and there were little sayings or things about them. And there was this one leader in this house of worship from some time ago. And it said, the thing that it said about him was that he was an ornament of God. And I was like, like lightning bolt. It was so beautiful. And it just, you know, when I saw the tree, which of course is lit up, but it didn't have ornaments. And I thought about how shiny we are. And sometimes I forget how shiny I am. And I just love that. That I can be an ornament of God. And, you know, I do better too when I try and think of you as being an ornament of God as opposed to, you know, driving me insane. So when I have a lot of grace and when I can find serenity, I can see you as an ornament as well. So then the next part of the serenity prayer is asking for serenity. And as I mentioned, for me, it's different than happiness. And so, you know, what is that for me? And I think for each of us, we come up with our own idea of what serenity is. And, you know, it's probably easier for me to say what it's not than what it is. But I know that it is, it's a feeling that I have. I just mentioned grace, that I know when I don't have serenity, I don't have much grace in my thinking about you, in my behavior with you. My shortcomings tend to be more front and center. I'm impatient. I'm judgmental. I'd like to tell you how to drive and how to work stuff in your life. But I don't really have that kind of suffering when I have serenity. There's this, I don't know how to describe it. It's this bandwidth, this state of being where I'm not as bothered by you. I don't feel a need to fix you. I don't even feel a need actually to think about what you're thinking about and what you're doing. I've got the focus on myself, and it's also not self-centeredness. It's centered in self. So the distinction between being centered in self and self-centered. I feel centered in self. I can walk in the world with a lot of calmness, a lot of compassion toward myself and to my fellows. Things slow down. I'm not in a hurry to get someplace. I'm paying attention to where I am. I feel present. I guess that's what serenity is for me. So cultivating serenity, you know, how have I scheduled myself? How am I sleeping? How am I eating? What am I doing? And what am I thinking about? And I've been thinking about that. I made a decision in terms of my thinking. And I don't believe that I am in charge of how I feel, but I do believe I'm in charge of what I think. I can't control how I feel, but I can control how I think about things. And that was a big thing in my recovery, is to choose to stop thinking about certain things in the moment. I mean, just like one day at a time. Sometimes it's in that moment, and sometimes it's more globally. Oh, it would be better for me not to return to this subject because it's causing me pain. I mean, I used to search out things. I used to ask questions knowing that the answer would cause me pain. Today, I don't do that because I made a decision not to. I'm a very curious person, but there's a lot of stuff that I just don't ask about anymore because I know the answer will cause me pain. And I don't need that anymore. And that was making a decision. But sometimes it's a more one day at a time, 1 hour at a time. What am I thinking about? And choosing to stop because it's not healthy. It's causing me pain. It's causing me suffering. That helps me cultivate serenity. The next part of the prayer is about accepting the things I cannot change. That is a really tall order for me. I have a better sense today than I did when I came into the rooms of what I can't change. I do like that I read somewhere something about I don't know if it's something I can change or cannot change until I try. So sometimes I actually need to try. Sometimes I can just reason it out with my sponsor, but sometimes I need to try it. Accepting the things I cannot change. Somebody said that's also known as let go or get dragged. And I got dragged a lot because I couldn't let go of wanting to change the things that I couldn't. I also heard a lot when I first came into Al-Anon about change your expectations. And, you know, I thought at a certain point, I don't want to change all of my expectations. Is that what Al-Anon is asking me to do? To change all my expectations, to have none? I don't want a life where I don't have any expectations about anything. That doesn't seem right to me. And then I heard change your expectations or change your circumstances. And I love that. That really helped me with, you know, the wisdom to know the difference. If I'm expecting someone to change who is not going to change, can I change my circumstances so I'm no longer expecting them to change? Do I need to be, you know, end this relationship? Do I need to change my expectations? Do I need to go? Or what else is in between those things that might lead me to more serenity? I think that accepting the things I cannot change takes me right back to step four in terms of what's true and what's not true. And the ways that I have lied to myself because I couldn't accept what was actually true, that it was too painful. So it's back to four sometimes. I do like thinking that when I'm very, very confused, is there a lie I'm trying really hard to believe? The kind of confusion that comes up that feels like it's the disease. Like not just, oh, which decision would be better here, but the kind of confusion that's, I don't know what to do and I don't know how I'm gonna know what to do, and that there's something about the confusion that comes with the disease of alcoholism that's a very particular kind of confusion. And I bet, I'm guessing each of you knows what that confusion is. It has a particular kind of feeling to it. And for me, it's a good question to ask. Is there a lie that I'm trying really hard to believe? And that has led to some hard truths for me to accept. Most recently, that has come up with, in another layer with my family, that it's been very difficult for me to accept that my family does not care for me, or certainly they don't express their care for me, as my sponsor says, in any way I can remotely recognize. And really, I spent my life saying, if you asked my family if they loved me, they would immediately say yes. If you asked them if they cared for me, they would say yes. And I used to think, well, there you have it. If they would say it, then it must be true. But that isn't the truth. And it has been very painful that my family really doesn't express any interest. They're really not interested in how I feel or what I think or what's really going on with me. It's been very painful, but my inability to accept that kept me having a fantasy relationship with them. And it was a relationship that I think on some level I thought, well, having a relationship with them in my mind is better than having no relationship with them. And it turned out that wasn't true. So it's been a hard road recently to let go of that and to be more honest with myself. And to, it's been sort of a blessing and a curse. I mean, it's a blessing to be more honest with myself, and more current with what actually is. And it's also led to a tremendous amount of loneliness. And I have a sponsee who was talking to me just recently about some things that she has shed, but she doesn't have anything new in its place. And she said, it just feels weird. And I don't know who I am in some ways anymore. And I think I knew exactly what she meant, because I felt that before and I feel that now, you know, that fantasy relationship that sort of finally I let go of has not yet been replaced. So I feel a little, hope is a little dicey at the moment and it feels lonely, but I've been here long enough that I know that something will replace that. And that's just the gift of keeping coming back, is the trust and the faith. And that even when I don't have hope and, you know, or trust around something, you know, and my sponsor says something, I think the last time we talked, I said, well, I'm just going to trust you because I don't have it. And that's what that relationship means to me. And that's what I get. And it's true. It's just parked with her. And I trust her and I trust my recovery. And so I just have to believe that, you know, this is going to work its way through. And if I remember that God has a plan for me and that, you know, there was a part of me that thinks, oh my God, I can't believe it took me, 61 years to get to this. But I also think I couldn't have done it a second before, that I wasn't ready. And that I do think, people get here when they're ready. That you get here when you can. And I also think that there are things that might have killed us had it not been when we were ready, had we been pushed, that there are things that I, obviously my recovery must be so that I can, it's strong enough that I can handle this now. And, 6 months ago even, or a decade ago, I wasn't ready for it. So I just have to believe that I got here when I could, with everything of my recovery. The courage to change the things I can. We don't talk a lot about courage in Al-Anon. Say it again, 5 minutes? Okay. We don't talk a lot about, like, straight up about courage in Al-Anon. Like, I would never say to a sponsee, it sounds like you don't have enough courage, kind of thing. I mean, I'm more inclined to think about, oh, is this a thing you need to accept or have the courage to change? But we don't talk about straight up courage. And I do want to share something that recently came up. I actually had a sponsee, and we were talking last weekend, and I said to her, I don't even know where this came from, so we know where it came from, right? I said, do you think your little self is disappointed in you? And we both immediately burst into tears. She ended up writing to me about it, and I knew I needed to write about it too. And I told my sponsor that I would, but I put it off and I put it off. And what I finally wrote to my sponsor was, even though I asked her this question, I have not had the courage to ask it of myself. I have been too afraid. I was scared that she would say, yes, I am disappointed in you. I had hoped for more for us, and you have not measured up. Now, my sponsor knows this. I said, remember, this is the girl who throws Molotov cocktails and burns shit down. But in preparing for my talk tonight about the Serenity Prayer, I had to think about courage. So here's some truth. Does she feel I have always had her back in the way she needed me? No. But she does feel that I have always tried my best, that I have moved us forward every time I could, that me getting us into recovery bettered us, and that each day I am more qualified to take care of us. I feel her compassion, which has surprised me because I've only before felt my compassion for her. That girl is also looking at her watch, though, saying, TikTok, keep moving. And so I forgot that I don't have to be afraid of what I'll discover when I'm honest with myself. And I never have to be afraid of that. And I also, like I heard in the rooms, when fear visits, you don't need to set out refreshments. And that's really sometimes maybe just what courage is. I'm not putting out little cakes for you. So let's go. And, I do think an asset of mine is that I am willing. And I'm willing to try things even if I later discover that it doesn't lead me toward a solution or it doesn't lead me toward serenity, but I am willing. And I guess the last piece, the wisdom to know the difference, that's fifth step to me, is that I call my sponsor, and sometimes it's just straight up, I don't have the wisdom to know the difference. Is this something that I need to accept, or is this something that I need to have the courage to change? And, there are lots of things where I can sort that out myself. But there are lots of things where I just can't and I need help. And that's one of the things I learned in Al-Anon is to ask for help. And so I really want to encourage you, if you don't have a sponsor, to get yourself one. And if that person is not the best match for you, get yourself another sponsor. I mean, I think we don't talk about it so much, but the expectation is if we spend our lives in recovery, and you hear we have 39 years here, we get lots of different sponsors. There are sponsors who become unavailable, who move on, and then there are also relationships which just aren't the best for us. I learned in here, you know, not to light someone's hair on fire on the way out the door. I learned that in here with leaving sponsor relationships. And so that's how I learned how to say goodbye with some grace and how to decide how much I'm going to share, how much I'm not during the exit, and then move on to a relationship that will better serve me. So I would really encourage you, if you don't have a sponsor, to get a sponsor. And, you know, that's for me the biggest place of reasoning out the wisdom to know the difference. And it's such a important, it's so important for me to have that discernment. And often I don't have it on my own. And it just brings me, again, it's one of the ways that I cultivate serenity, it just occurred to me, is that I don't have to chew on that and have sleepless nights. I can work it out, and that is another way of cultivating serenity, is having that, my relationship with a sponsor, and also in particular, reasoning out, is this something I need to accept or have the courage to change? And once I have that answer, I mean, so much of Al-Anon for me is it's not the answer, it's the right question. The spiritual question, how can I make this work, is not a spiritual question. I used to ask myself that probably 10 times a day before I came into recovery. How can I make this relationship work? How can I make this work? I didn't know. It's not a spiritual question. And that's what sponsorship does for me. It helps me find the spiritual question. And as soon as I have a spiritual question, man, the answer comes super, super fast, because it's really, when God is speaking, it's really simple. It's not complicated. And so once I have that question, and the spiritual question is usually pretty simple, then, you know, God's got some elbow room and can step in and give me some answers. So I think that's it for me tonight. So thank you very much. And I wish you all a happy and healthy and serene new year.